String Summit, July 19th through 22nd at Horning's Hideout in North Plains, Oregon. The Northwest String Summit is celebrating its 17th year as a bluegrass, roots, and Americana music festival. Performers this year include three nights of the Yonder Mountain String Band and Green Sky Bluegrass. Other performers include Andy Hall, the Shook Twins, Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, The Deer, Carolyn Cotter, and many more. Again, that's the Northwest String Summit from July 19th through the 22nd at Horning's Hideout, 21277 Northwest Brunswick Canyon Road in North Plains, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Are folks who have shown themselves and asked for asylum. They're trying to get protection. They're not trying to hide.
We are here because we believe that families belong together.
But what are we going to do after today?
What I really want to try to impress on you is to...
This is a little treatise called The Little Red Hen.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. U.S. top court throws wedding bouquet case back to Washington state jurists. Angola grants legal recognition to LGBTQ rights group. And queer asylum seekers caught in Trump's immigration crisis. Those stories and more this week, now that you've tuned in to This Way Out.
I'm Michelle Yater.
And I'm Seth Eric Cutler.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending June 30th, 2018. Queer-related developments at the U.S. Supreme Court top this week's news. The High Court first essentially kicked a case down the road that tested a Washington state florist's religious right to deny service to LGBTQ people. Baronel Stutzman, owner of Arlene's Flowers and Gifts in Richland, Washington, refused to provide flowers for longtime customer Robert Ingersoll in 2013 when she found out that they would be for his wedding to another man. She said she declined his request because of her relationship with Jesus Christ. After traveling up the judicial ladder, the Washington Supreme Court ruled unanimously that the florist had violated the state's law against discrimination. Rather than hearing her appeal, America's High Court returned the case to the Washington Supreme Court, saying it needed to reconsider its ruling in light of the justice's decision in the case of a Colorado baker's refusal to make a wedding cake for a gay couple. In that case, the High Court ruled for the baker because it viewed the state Civil Rights Commission's decision against him as being based on anti-religious animus. There's no allegation of similar bias in the Washington florist's case. Attorney General Robert Ferguson said that he was confident that the court will come to the same conclusion they did in their previous unanimous ruling upholding the civil rights of same-sex couples in our state.
LGBTQ advocacy groups joined the chorus of other human rights organizations to condemn the second U.S. Supreme Court ruling of the week, this one upholding President Donald Trump's much-maligned ban on people from predominantly Muslim countries entering the country. Lambda Legal's Rachel Tiven wrote that the decision was as shameful as the internment of Japanese Americans and the door slammed to Jewish refugees fleeing Nazi Germany. This month, she added, the court expressed deep concern about the slightest perceived animosity towards a Christian baker, but today is untroubled by the President of the United States singling out Muslims for unequal treatment. The Transgender Law Center's Chris Hayashi wrote, the decision adds yet another disgraceful chapter to our country's history of targeting people because of who they are. Sarah Warbelow of the Human Rights Campaign said the ban undermines civil liberties in this country and does nothing to keep all Americans safer. GLAAD's Kate Ellis wrote, our unified communities will stand together in firm opposition to this abjectly un-American ruling. And Aaron Morris of Immigration Equality wrote, "We are so much greater than this moment, and progress is something we must demand every day."
The week of high court disappointments for equality advocates ended with the announcement by Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy that he was retiring at the age of 81. Often considered to be the swing vote in 5-4 decisions, Kennedy was appointed by Ronald Reagan some 30 years ago and was expected to be a reliably conservative voice on the high court. But he wrote all 4 pro-queer Supreme Court decisions, beginning with the overturning of state sodomy laws in 2003 and through the court's marriage equality ruling in 2015. A devout Roman Catholic, Kennedy generally argued that it was immoral to deny equal protection of the law to a targeted and otherwise law-abiding group of people. U.S. progressives are worried about the future makeup of an already right-leaning court. Political conservatives and the religious right are salivating over the chance for President Donald Trump to appoint a judge who would further their efforts to overturn Roe v. Wade, marriage equality, and other laws protecting minorities. Trump's first appointment, Neil Gorsuch, has, as expected, joined the court's ideologically conservative majority in votes so far. During his presidential campaign, Trump promised to appoint justices like Antonin Scalia, a staunch opponent of a woman's right to choose and of LGBTQ rights. The Advocate described a published list of possible candidates Trump is considering to take Kennedy's seat as appalling. Trump's Republican Party holds a slim 51-49 majority in the U.S. Senate, where a high court nominee must be confirmed. Its leadership is intent on getting a nominee onto the high court before the midterm elections in November. Minority Democrats will do all they can to stall that process until after those elections, hoping that they can ride a wave of anti-Trump sentiment on Election Day to become the majority party in one or even both houses of Congress.
In other news, the Southern African nation of Angola has granted legal recognition to a queer rights group for the first time. Iris Angola's Carlos Fernandez called the Justice Ministry's announcement historic and said it would give more weight to the work of our organization, which was founded in 2013. Ian Levine of Human Rights Watch tweeted that it was good news from the new government of President João Lourenço, who succeeded the 4-decade rule of José Eduardo dos Santos and seems intent on improving Angola's much-criticized human rights record. The oil-rich country doesn't have any specifically anti-LGBTQ laws on the books, and a new penal code approved by Parliament in May includes a ban on sexual orientation-based workplace discrimination. But activists complain about anti-queer bias in accessing healthcare and educational opportunities. According to Reuters, Iris Angola has about 200 members. A second LGBTQ rights group in the country has yet to seek legal recognition.
Ukrainian police arrested 56 protesters ahead of Kiev's LGBTQ Pride March on June 17th, but none of them were among the more than 5,000 people parading with Pride. All the detainees were members of far-right radical groups that were trying to stop it. Riot police scuffled throughout the morning with more than 150 protesters trying to block the route of the march through the center of the Ukrainian capital city. One far-right group, C14, complained in a Facebook post about whose side the police were on. "Look at how they protect sexual minorities," it read, "and violate the rights of regular Kiev citizens." Violent attacks disrupted the city's pride marches as recently as 2015. A beefed-up police presence has kept the festivities peaceful since 2016.
Hundreds of LGBTQ activists and their supporters took to the streets of Tel Aviv on June 8th to temporarily block that city's annual pride parade. They said it was to protest the Israeli government's cynical use of the queer community to give the impression that the country is a liberal and progressive place, while at the same time infringing upon the most basic human rights of the Palestinian people living in Gaza and the West Bank. most news outlets focused on the more than 250,000 locals and tourists waving rainbow flags and enjoying the beach city's 20th annual Pride Parade. Israeli lawmakers killed a bill to allow same-gender couples to enter into civil unions just 2 days before the Pride March. Civil marriage doesn't exist in Israel, something the country's progressives also want to change. All weddings in the country must be conducted by religious authorities, and none will officiate the marriage of a gay or lesbian couple.
An estimated 600 people in the Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya braved death threats on June 15th to hold a first-ever Pride celebration. The camp's population is filled with Islamic settlers and refugees from Uganda, South Sudan, Somalia, and Ethiopia, where same-gender love is condemned. While the event itself was relatively peaceful, notes were soon posted all around the camp warning queer refugees to leave the camp or we are going to kill you one by one. There were reports that a lesbian and a transgender person were attacked the following night. But one of the defiant organizers, Ugandan refugee Mbariza Moesa, hoped that the celebration would become an annual event at the camp.
And finally, the rough-and-tumble U.S. town of Deadwood, South Dakota, now home to some 1,270 people, according to the most recent census, has been immortalized in movies and on TV shows as one of the Wild West's wilder places. And now, Deadwood has hosted its first-ever Pride Festival. The weekend celebration on June 23rd and 24th included a pool party and a pub crawl, along with a drag contest and dance party, capped off by a Sunday brunch. Derek Livermont, a member of the organizing committee, told local TV station KEVN that with no bars or community spaces in the Black Hills specifically welcoming LGBTQ people, life can be a little bit lonely and separated sometimes. Pride celebrants were going to meet people that were in their area that they had no idea were there, he said, and really start to feel like there's other people out there.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending June 30th, 2018. Written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazer, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at the all-new thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Seth Eric Cutler.
And I'm Michelle Yater.
I've got a sweet tooth, licorice drops and jelly roll. Hey, sugar daddy, Hansel needs some sugar in his bowl.
Hi, this is John Cameron Mitchell, the writer-director of Hedwig and the Angry Inch and Short Bus. And you're listening to This Way Out, the international weekly radio magazine for all our sexually diverse communities.
Some nights I stay up, cashing in my bad luck. Some nights I call it a draw. But I still wake up, I still see a ghost. Oh Lord, I'm still not sure what I stand for. Oh, what do I stand for? What do I stand for? Most nights I don't know anymore.
The Trump administration's disastrous policy of separating asylum-seeking immigrants from their children at the Mexican border and the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in favor of Trump's ban on refugees from seven Muslim-majority countries have dramatically added to the crisis faced by LGBTQ people seeking safety. U.S. asylum claims have always been a tough sell for those fleeing homophobic violence. Now claimants from the targeted countries are terrified that their hopes are gone. Even before the strain placed on detention facilities by the new border policy, Immigration and Customs Enforcement had abandoned its own rules aimed at protecting the LGBTQs in their custody, leaving them subject to alarming rates of sexual assault and solitary confinement. Catherine Davis Young of Public News Service reports on the latest data showing the particular jeopardy for transgender U.S. immigration detainees.
The analysis from the Center for American Progress shows detention centers are especially dangerous for transgender immigrants. In addition to cases of sexual assault, it reports cases of transgender women being held in facilities for men, or sometimes in solitary confinement. In response to recent written questions from Congresswoman Kathleen Rice on Immigration and Customs Enforcement's handling of LGBT detainees, the agency replied it was, quote, committed to faithfully executing our duty to enforce immigration laws, end quote. But Sherita Gruberg with the Center for American Progress fears the Department of Homeland Security hasn't been taking appropriate steps to protect LGBT immigrants.
DHS is supposed to do a risk classification assessment on people during intake. And for people who are particularly vulnerable to sexual abuse, that's supposed to factor in from the first step of when they're deciding, do we detain this person or not, to where exactly do we detain this individual.
The Trump administration has vowed to tighten policies at the U.S.-Mexico border for reasons of national security. In April, President Donald Trump issued a memorandum asking immigration enforcement not to release detainees as they await immigration hearings. But Gruberg says the increasing federal pressure to keep more people in custody is putting LGBT immigrants in situations where they're more likely to face assault. Gruberg says LGBT people make up only about 0.1% of the population in ICE custody. She says many of them are seeking asylum from sexual violence or discrimination in their own countries.
These are people who have a very strong claim to protection in the U.S., and they usually are folks who have, at the border, shown themselves and asked for asylum. They're trying to get protection. They're not trying to hide.
37 members of Congress sent a letter to the Department of Homeland Security asking to address concerns over the safety of LGBT detainees. For Public News Service, I'm Catherine Davis Young.
Amid the outrage over toddler detention camps, the heightened dangers for trans people detained by U.S. immigration did not escape attention at nationwide Families Belong Together rallies on June 30th. Emmy-winning trans actress-producer Laverne Cox spoke at the Los Angeles event.
We are here because we believe that families belong together. We are here because our hearts are broken, seeing and hearing accounts of children being stripped from the custody of their parents. We are here to demand that our government reunite migrant children with their families right now. But let us not forget that this country was built on the backs of slave labor that routinely stripped children from the custody of their parents. A country that was built on the genocide of Native people. Let us not forget that the corporations that own private for-profit prisons also run the privately owned immigration detention centers, which are profiting from imprisoning migrant families and children. This connection between the prison industrial complex and our government's latest moral atrocities reminds me that this is all of it intersectional. The intersecting systems of what bell hooks calls imperialist, white supremacist, capitalist patriarchy. I'd like to add to that imperialist, cisnormative, heteronormative, imperialist, white supremacist. Those forces are constantly working to oppress all of us, all of the time, simultaneously, from immigration detention centers to the Supreme Court and beyond. So we must come together now more than ever and not let the oppressor strategy of divide and conquer keep us from this fight we must wage together. We must each love each other harder than we ever have before, even as we disagree. Because the neo-fascist history that is repeating itself right now must not stand. It is Dr. Cornel West who reminds us that justice is what love looks like in public. Justice is what love looks like in public. No justice?
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
It is now my distinct honor and pleasure to introduce the president and CEO of the Trans Latina Coalition, working every day at the intersection of immigration and transgender identity. Please join me in welcoming, along with members of the Trans Latina Coalition, Bambi Salcedo. Primero que nada, a mí me gusta darle gracias a mi poder superior por darme la oportunidad de estar aquí con ustedes. También quiero honrar la tierra en la cual estamos hoy parados y paradas. I want to ask permission to the people of the Tongva land to allow me to say a few words to you. I want to also honor the land where we're standing on today. You know, it is cute and everything that we're all here today. And it is a weekend that we can come out and it's all good. But what are we going to do after today? That's the question that we want to ask ourselves and the people that we know, our families, our siblings. And it's important that we understand how immigration affects the lives of all of our people. But I want to talk specifically about the lives and issues of trans women who are in immigration detention as well. If we are not part of families. Just a few weeks ago, about 3 weeks ago, one of our sisters, Rosana Hernandez, perished at the hands of the f***ed up ICE machine. She died caged on a hospital bed by herself. There was no one there to give her the love that she deserved, to give her dignity. 13 trans women have been brutally murdered in the United States so far this year. And you know who created all the violence that trans people experience? Those motherfuckers. And so the question is, what are we going to do to dismantle the ICE machine? What are we going to do when they're getting to elect the new Supreme Judge? It is not just cute for us to come here and stand in the sun and get open and shit and just go home and do nothing. Coming out to the streets will not solve the issues and the problems that we have within our society. It is our responsibility to change the landscape of our people. Are we going to do that?
Yes!
Let's not kiss ass. Politicians come up here and say, like, yes, you're cute, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that. And then they get into office and they forget all about us. We need to hold them accountable. Just as we put them into office, we can get them the f*** out of office. We need to be radical, intentional, and strategic, and f*** up. Just sit down on the sidewalks and see us march. We need to make changes and we need to organize. We need to mobilize and elect people whose heart is in the right place and that they know that they work for us, not for those motherfuckers who continue to get money off our bodies. Immigration system is exactly set up the way the prison industrial complex is set up. And politicians contribute to all of that. So we need to make sure that we create new strategies that will address the humanity of our people. Can we do that?
Yes!
When I say people, you say power! People!
Power!
People!
Power!
People!
Power!
Let's get some shit. Yeah. How many of us have to die before you get involved? That's the message.
Laverne Cox and Bambi Salcedo spoke at the Los Angeles Families Belong Together rally. Also present on stage was pop superstar and gay icon Cher, who brought the issues home in a very personal way.
So they told me, don't talk about Trump. And what I say is F that, okay? We wouldn't be here if he had compassion, if he didn't care about kidnapping innocent children from their parents and leave them, throw them in cages on the floor with tinfoil to cry into. So we know that, and we understand that. But what I really want to try to impress on you is to vote.
Yes! Vote!
If you don't vote, you will not recognize this country, and you will lose everything that you just now take for granted, every right that you have. And
yes.
I'm not being dramatic.
Yes.
Well, maybe I am, but I'm
no.
not. Okay?
No.
This man will take everything. I have never seen anything like it. So I wanted to tell you that. I also want to tell you a story. When I was a baby, my father took my mother across the United States, and he said, I have to go to New York, I'm gonna get some money, and I'll be back. Get a job while I'm gone. I'm putting Cher in a Catholic home. So my mother got a job, an all-night diner, $3 a night, and tips. She went to see me at the home. The mother superior said, you cannot come in, you cannot see her, because you're not married. And my mother said, yes, I am married. She said, when your husband comes back and gives me proof, you can see her. My mother came every day and looked at me through a window. And I was crying at the crib. I cannot tell you how long this lasts. Thank you.
That was Cher speaking at the June 30th Los Angeles Families Belong Together rally.
This is a little treatise on basic economics called The Little Red Hen.
And finally this week, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders was recently asked to leave a D.C. area restaurant, and late-night TV hosts could not resist adding their own dishes to the menu. So nibble on these morsels served up by Stephen Colbert, Trevor Noah, Jimmy Fallon, Jordan Klepper, and Seth Meyers.
This is a tale of a little red hen, lived on a farm in a chicky chick pen. She and her brood would never shirk, but the live long day just work, work, work.
Here's what happened. Huckabee Sanders went out for dinner with her husband and some friends. The staff recognized her and called the owner, who gathered everyone in the back and allowed employees to vote on whether to boot Huckabee Sanders out of the restaurant. Oh, good. So someone's getting due process.
Asking Sanders to leave was probably the nicest thing they could have done. The waiter was probably like, listen, if I'm being honest, all the chefs are jizzing in your food right now.
Turns out her server asked her what she wanted as an appetizer, and out of habit, she refused to answer.
Hey, Red Hen, you might not like kids getting separated from their parents, but that does not give you the right to separate a woman from her cheese plate.
Sanders wasn't going to let this slide. The next day, from her official White House Twitter account, she tweeted, last night I was told by the owner of Red Hen in Lexington, Virginia, to leave because I work for at POTUS, and I politely left. Her actions say far more about her than about me. I always do my best to treat people, including those I disagree with, respectfully. You work for Donald Trump. You don't even treat yourself with respect.
Usually people who work for the Trump administration are asked to leave the Trump administration.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Michelle Yeader and Seth Eric Cutler, with thanks to Brian DeShazer. Fun performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors, who make this program possible. Help keep our 30-year streak going at the all-new thiswayout.org. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at Post Office Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KUCR Riverside, California, 3GCR Morrell, Victoria, WSMU North Dartmouth, Massachusetts, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now, y'all, stay tuned.
As your president, I will do everything in my power to protect our LGBTQ citizens.
Believe me, believe me. Believe me.
If you are a young woman in America, or you care about a young woman in America, pay attention to this, because it will forever change your life.
Brett Kavanaugh has been so aggressively hostile to abortion rights and so eager to establish a license to discriminate, and that is why we are worried.
Will trans people be allowed in the military? No. Will sexual orientation and gender identity be read as sex discrimination?
Forget about it.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Oral arguments against India's sodomy law sound good. Another gay pair is flogged in Aceh despite government assurances to the contrary. And queers confront the U.S. High Court crisis. More stories and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Sarah Sweeney.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending July 14th, 2018. India's Supreme Court began hearing oral arguments this week in yet another challenge to Penal Code Section 377. The law dates back to 1861 and is a holdover from British colonial rule. It criminalizes consensual adult same-gender sex, along with bestiality, as against the order of nature, and punishes those acts with up to life in prison. Its supporters insist that the law is rarely prosecuted, so the High Court case is basically much ado about nothing. But opponents point to the stigma it places on sexual and gender variant people in the country of 1.3 billion and say it's often used by thugs or even by police officials to extort closeted individuals. And the National Record Bureau, which only established a database for prosecutions under 377 in 2014, reported that more than 2,000 cases were filed during 2016 alone under the law.
The Delhi High Court struck down Section 377 in 2009 as a violation of human rights. Prompted by appeals lodged by Hindu, Christian, and Muslim groups, the Supreme Court overruled that decision in 2013, reinstating the law and saying that only Parliament could repeal it. But a ruling by the Supreme Court late last year established a constitutional right to privacy, which seems to have precipitated the judge's reconsideration of that 2013 Section 377 ruling. The challenge this time also has the support of not only queer and human rights groups, including India's NAS Foundation, which filed the first challenge to the law, but of very visible celebrity plaintiffs. A well-known hotelier, a famous chef, a respected journalist, an accomplished businesswoman, and a classical dancer each told the court this week how Section 377 made them feel ashamed and directly challenged their chances of a happy life.
After refusing to declare a position, the government of Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi told the judges this week that it would defer to the wisdom of the court and not intervene on either side. Equality supporters were encouraged by initial comments by one of the judges, who declared that same-gender sex is a variation in nature, not an aberration. An outspoken opponent of repeal, Suresh Kumar Kushal, told the court that the law needed to be maintained to protect national security. Indian soldiers, he warned, would have sex with each other on the job if not for fear of Section 377.
In other news, despite statements last year by the Indonesian provincial governor of Aceh, Irwandi Yusuf, that corporal punishments for violations of Islamic law would not be carried out publicly, two young men were flogged this week in the public square after being caught having consensual gay sex. The governor's claim to keep such acts behind closed doors followed worldwide revulsion to the published images last year of two young gay men being humiliated and brutally caned in the public square as the crowd cheered after being caught engaging in consensual sex. The two young men this week each received more than 80 lashes as the crowd chanted, "Harder, harder." Like the couple last year, they were taken into custody by religious vigilantes and turned over to the police. Agence France-Presse reports that they were actually the second gay couple to suffer that punishment this year. It also noted that Aceh Governor Youssef, who called last year's global criticism of the canings Islamophobic, was himself arrested last week on corruption charges. Indonesia is the world's most populous Muslim-majority nation, but its laws are generally secular. Aceh officials, however, were given permission to rule under strict Islamic law by the national government in 2001 to resolve a provincial demand for independence. Public floggings are common in Aceh for other infractions that include gambling, non-marital sex, and selling or drinking alcohol in public.
Australia's Uniting Church this week became the first religious body since civil marriage became legal there to allow its ministers to officiate the weddings of lesbian and gay couples. The church had defined marriage as a union between a man and a woman, but new language approved this week by its governing body, the Assembly, says that, for Christians, marriage is the freely given consent and commitment in public and before God of two people to live together for life. Ministers, however, can still choose to perform or opt out of officiating the marriages of same-gender couples. As with several other faith groups, the Uniting Church has wrestled with the treatment of gays and lesbians for a number of years. The new marriage language followed a 3-year study recommending the change that was first approved by the Assembly's Standing Committee. The Uniting Church has almost 1 million members, according to the 2016 census. The third largest Christian denomination down under, behind Roman Catholic and Anglican churches. The Assembly also affirmed the sovereignty this week of the First Peoples of Australia.
A committee in Israel's Knesset, or Parliament, approved a bill this week to extend surrogacy rights to single women. Such services are now only available to infertile married heterosexual couples. However, the committee rejected an amendment by a vote of 8-4 that would have also extended surrogacy rights to same-gender couples. Those couples can now hire surrogates in other countries, but it's a very expensive process fraught with legal obstacles. Openly gay MP Amir Ohana, who had proposed the Queer Couple Inclusive Amendment, told the Jerusalem Post that he was just asking for a little humanity. Moti Yogev, a right-wing Knesset member, spouted the usual debunked blather about a child needing a mother and a father and asked, "Who gave us permission to bring children into a deficient situation?" But Itzik Shmuli, the first Israeli lawmaker to come out while in office, complained that, "We are good enough to serve the country, but not to be parents. It's an insult I cannot describe."
Members of the Appropriations Committee of the Republican-controlled U.S. House of Representatives approved a proposal this week to allow child welfare and adoption agencies to refuse to consider same-gender couples based on sincerely held religious beliefs or moral convictions. All the Republicans but one voted in favor, while the Democrats were unanimously opposed. The proposal amended a major funding bill for the Departments of Labor, Health and Human Services, and Education. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi slammed what she called this disgusting, deeply immoral, and profoundly offensive effort. David Stacey of the Human Rights Campaign wrote that, "Any member of Congress who supports this amendment is clearly stating that it is more important to them to discriminate than it is to find loving homes for children in need."
A report on the Slate website this week warned that the Department of Health and Human Services is taking money from the Ryan White HIV/AIDS program to pay for the additional costs of detaining people who cross the U.S. southern border illegally. The report says the Health and Human Services Department's Office of Refugee Resettlement will need an extra 25,400 beds just for the children, which would create a budget deficit at the agency of $585 million. Officials say that the agency is already caring for about 11,800 children. They wouldn't say exactly how much the agency intends to reallocate from the Ryan White program, only confirming that the process has already begun. While the Trump administration claims that immigration agents are no longer separating children from their parents, eyewitness accounts in a number of detention facilities suggest otherwise. And as we record this newscast, it appears that Trump officials will have failed to meet a federal court-ordered deadline to reunite detained children under the age of 5 with their parents. According to PAWS magazine, Trump's proposed 2019 budget already cuts millions of dollars from the Ryan White program, along with AIDS housing programs and HIV/AIDS programs of the Centers for Disease Control. California Democratic Representative Barbara Lee tweeted that the idea of taking money from the Ryan White program to jail immigrant kids was unacceptable on so many levels, I don't know where to start.
But finally, maybe it's because we're getting older, but activism seems to be getting younger and younger these days.
My name is Molly Pinta. I am 12 years old, gay, and proud. As a gay child, I would love to see a pride celebration in my town. I recently went to Aurora's parade, and it was one of the most beautiful things I have ever seen.
Molly wants to bring a first-ever pride parade to her Illinois hometown, Buffalo Grove. Her mom has created a GoFundMe page to raise the estimated $30,000 it would take to stage the event. Soon after attending Aurora Pride, Molly came out to members of her middle school's Gay Straight Alliance, a group she helped create. According to NBC News, she then reached out to Indivisible Aurora, the grassroots group behind the first Pride Parade in that Chicago suburb. They agreed to back Molly's idea of bringing an inaugural Pride Parade to Buffalo Grove. Her GoFundMe page says the first Buffalo Grove Pride Parade will be held on June 2, 2019. City officials have quickly jumped on board. They've already scheduled meetings for Molly with the Buffalo Grove Police Department to map out a route.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending July 14th, 2018. Written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazer, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at the new and improved thiswayout.org. where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Sarah Sweeney.
Transgender people will not go back to being an uninsurable pre-existing condition.
Can the Kavanaugh nomination for the U.S. Supreme Court be blocked? We've got analysis of the high tension ahead for the High Court. But first, in the present political climate, it's a good thing that dance is not a pre-existing condition.
Le Ballet Trocadero de Monte Carlo, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. An all-male dance company known as Le Ballet Trocadero de Monte Carlo is no ordinary ballet troupe. These men dance all the parts, their heavy bodies delicately balancing on toes as swans, water sprites, or romantic princesses, using over-the-top camp and loads of slapstick. They often open with a rendition of Act Two of Swan Lake, wearing pink tutus and palm frond-sized eyelashes. Affectionately known as the Trocs, they were founded in 1974, first performing in the Late Late shows in off-Broadway lofts. In no time, audiences were eating it up with a spoon. Catching the eye of mainstream dance critics, they were hailed as an artistic and popular success. In fact, the Trocs have established themselves as a major dance phenomenon throughout the world, appearing in over 500 cities worldwide. Looks like this troupe will keep on trockin'. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios of WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Tom Miller.
Young
Hello, I'm Tab Hunter, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio show for all of our sexually diverse communities.
I'm traditional marriage.
But what do you say to a lesbian who's married or a gay man who's married who says, Donald Trump, what's traditional about being married three times?
Well, they have a very good point.
While the Trump administration has failed to chalk up many points on the legislative scoreboard, it's been winning the game when it comes to judicial appointments, especially on the U.S. Supreme Court. Thanks to the senatorial machinations that blocked President Barack Obama from nominating a high court justice during his last year in office, the retirement of Justice Anthony Kennedy last month has given Trump the chance to pick his second extremely conservative nominee. LGBTQ activists and progressive leaders are sounding the alarm about replacing the frequently swing-voting Kennedy with D.C. Circuit Court Judge Brett Kavanaugh. Gay USA TV's Ann Northrup and Andy Hum reviewed Kavanaugh's lengthy paper trail of rulings from the bench and legal opinions he's written for scholarly journals.
He dissented in a case where the court allowed a 17-year-old immigrant girl who was in detention to get an abortion when she realized she was pregnant. He said, oh, no, that's too quick. No, we can't allow that. She may have a right to, but really, she should be assigned to a foster care family before this decision is made. Notwithstanding that that drags out the time that she is pregnant with the clock ticking, he really would rather that she not have an abortion.
So that's going to be the major thing on that he's going to overturn Roe v. Wade.
He also, in a case that preceded Hobby Lobby, said that companies should have the right to withhold coverage of birth control for their employees and should not have to fill out the form referring the employee to an insurance company that will give them coverage.
So that's one of the big things that that our side is going to try to get him on. The other one is the fact that he criticized the Supreme Court for upholding the Affordable Care Act, and they feel that he's going to overturn that. He's totally against the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. He's against net neutrality, which you rely on to get, you know, to websites. He thinks those things are unconstitutional. He was on the team on Bush v. Gore.
Yes, defending Bush's election chances in the whole Florida recount thing.
When the United States Supreme Court ruled that detainees on Guantanamo were entitled to challenge their detentions, he tried to undermine that ruling in many ways and actually rendered it rather toothless. He's been on the D.C. Circuit for 12 years.
He's also against workers having rights to the extent we think they should.
Except when they want to bring guns to work. I mean, he's totally
pro-gun,
for gun rights. And he's opponent of environmental regulations.
Yep.
He's totally pro-business. Labor always loses. Business wins.
He's against voting rights. He voted to uphold a voter ID law in North Carolina.
The steps of the Supreme Court were the scene of sober warnings from Democratic Senate Judiciary Committee members the day after the Kavanaugh nomination was announced, where about 1,000 defiant activists had rallied the night before. Senators Dianne Feinstein, Chuck Schumer, and Kamala Harris each cited a range of concerns.
Because the issue of gun safety is so important to me, I want to mention how extreme Kavanaugh's views are in this area. Even though five circuit courts have upheld bans against assault weapons, he argued in 2011 against Washington, D.C.'s ban because weapons like AR-15s are in, quote, common use, end quote.
He's even argued that sitting presidents shouldn't face criminal investigation. No investigation of a president. Is it any wonder that President Trump chose Kavanaugh from the list of 25? When we know he's obsessed with this investigation? He even said that a president doesn't have to follow a law if the president deems it, his words, unconstitutional.
Let's be clear about what this is about. It's about government taking on the decision about a woman and what she does with her body instead of giving that woman and her family and her God the power to make the decision for herself. So if you are a young woman in America or you care about a young woman in America, pay attention to this because it will forever change your life.
Mara Keisling of the National Center for Transgender Equality inspired hope at the rally the night before by reminding the crowd that an aroused citizenry has protected the Affordable Care Act, at least so far, and Senator Cory Booker called on the people to renew that kind of commitment.
People thought we couldn't save the ACA, and we saved it over and over and over again. Are we ready to save it again? This fight is not about R's and D's, senators. This fight is about the ACA. It's about Roe v. Wade. It is about protecting people's health and their lives. Transgender people will not go back to being an uninsurable pre-existing condition.
We stand strong. We stand together. We stand convicted. And I call upon everybody now. This won't just be decided in the United States Senate. Everybody in around America must decide now. Do we want to go backward 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years?
Hell no!
Lambda Legal CEO Rachel Tiven told Democracy Now! Why Kavanaugh's addition to the court would have a long-lasting and far-reaching impact.
I think what's crucial here is we cannot afford 40 more years of Trump values on this court. And we have to, what we've learned from the Trump presidency is that you have to believe what people say. You have to watch what they do and take them at their word. And Brett Kavanaugh has been so aggressively hostile to abortion rights and so eager to establish a license to discriminate for people who don't feel comfortable following non-discrimination law. And that is why we are worried. Abortion rights are the foundation of individual liberty in the United States. And if abortion rights fall, and we are one vote away from possibly seeing Roe versus Wade, not just abortion, but birth control undermined, if that happens, then LGBTQ people are directly at risk. It is the foundation of individual liberty and our rights to be free, not just marriage equality, but free in our own bedrooms, are really at risk.
Let's take a second to just remember what issues are likely to come before this new Supreme Court.
Again, Gay USA TV's Ann Northrup and Andy Hum.
Marriage equality. Will this be thrown back to the states for individual state decisions and no more federal government approval of same-sex marriage and federal benefits out the window, of course. Abortion, reproductive freedom rights. Will freedom of religion be elevated to an extent where
yes,
civil laws make no difference? Will trans people be allowed in the military? No. Will sexual orientation and gender identity be read as sex discrimination?
Forget about it.
David Cole of the American Civil Liberties Union discussed Kennedy's pivotal role on the court on Democracy Now! And charted the way forward with Lambda Legal's Rachel Tiven.
Justice Kennedy was also a conservative, appointed by a Republican president, and voted often with the conservatives, particularly on business cases. He had an open mind, and he believed in an evolving constitution. And as a result, he was willing to listen, and willing to depart from the sort of script and to side with the liberals in some cases, with the conservatives in others. And as a result, he kept the court within the mainstream of American society, notwithstanding that it's had a majority of conservative justices for the last 40 years. He wrote all of the court's gay rights decisions, a number of them 5-4, including the marriage equality. He was the fifth vote to preserve Roe versus Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey. He was the fifth vote to strike down the death penalty for juveniles. He was the fifth vote to hold that disparate impact is a violation of the Fair Housing Act, a critical interpretation of a civil rights statute. He was the fifth vote to save affirmative action. So, you know, if it weren't for Justice Kennedy, we would be living in a very, very different constitutional world.
I want to emphasize how much people's lives are at stake. If the Affordable Care Act is utterly gutted and overturned by this court, that has a drastic effect on the lives of LGBTQ people, and particularly people living with HIV. At the time that the ACA was first passed, 17% of people living with HIV had access to private health insurance, and that left a huge gap in care. The ACA has been transformative for the lives of people living with HIV and AIDS. This is a death sentence if it is overturned by an activist court that doesn't really care whether people live or die.
You know, the question will be, if Kavanaugh is confirmed, and we have five more conservative justices on the court, will we be living in a very different world? And I think the answer, we don't know the answer, but I think we know this. The answer depends more on us than it does on Justice Kavanaugh. If we go to the polls at the midterms, if we go to the polls in 2020, if we turn this moment around into a galvanizing moment for those who believe in civil rights and civil liberties, and the politics of the country reflects that, I think we can.
Popular support for saving the Affordable Care Act was massive, right? And so if everybody who called their senators about the ACA calls their senators about this nomination, it is absolutely possible to say that Brett Kavanaugh's views are not adequate to represent the American people.
And we'll rise up. I like the waves. We'll rise up. In spite of the ache, we'll rise up. And we'll do it a thousand times again.
Judge Brett Kavanaugh has already begun making the rounds in the Senate ahead of his confirmation hearing. Republican Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has vowed to have the new justice in place before the Supreme Court convenes in October. Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Michael LeBeau and Sarah Sweeney, produced with Brian DeShazer from Democracy Now!, and Ann Northrup and Andy Hum on their Gay USA TV program. Andra Day performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors who make this program possible. Help keep our 30-year streak going at the new and improved thiswayout.org. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Ciappella and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WRFZ Rochester, New York, KGHI Westport, Washington, 5RRR Woomera, South Australia, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
Good evening. The time is 6:58 and 18 seconds and counting. You are listening to the one, the only KBO Portland. And up next is Calculated Conversations.
TEBU members. Thank you for being a part of our amazing community. It takes all of us to manage this great community resource, and the role played by the KBOO Board of Directors is essential. Here is an opportunity for you to join the KBOO Board and become part of the team that is guiding our daily work and representing the interests and visions of all our members. Please consider applying to become a KBOO Board member if you want to help serve our community and put your gifts and talents to good use. There is a time commitment of about 15 hours a month for all board members, and you must be a KBOO member. To apply, go to kboo.fm and fill out an application, or stop by the station to pick up a paper copy. The deadline to apply is July 20th, 2018. We are looking for folks who love KBOO, who are committed to our community, and want to carry forward KBOO's values of peace, justice, democracy, human rights, multiculturalism, environmentalism, freedom of expression, and social change. KBOO needs you. Apply today.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Pass the Mic on Friday, July 20th from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Franklin High School in Portland. Pass the Mic aims to decrease isolation and find ways to connect youth to carve out their own expressive safe space and to share it in their own creative terms. This five-day music camp culminates in a closing concert by the immigrant and refugee youth campers, featuring their bands and performances created during the week. Again, that's Pass the Mic on Friday, July 20th from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Franklin High School, 5405 Southeast Woodward Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Portland.
Mm-hmm.